Hello, everyone, and welcome in to a rare edition of the JMAC podcast. Good evening. I hope you can hear me okay. I hope you can see me all right. I forget sometimes what all of my settings should be because I've been out on the campaign trail and I haven't been doing the podcast as much as I would like to, as much as I should, probably. So let me know, make sure that you can hear me. Please say hello. Let me know where you're at. David says it's been a minute. I hope the campaign is going well. We'll talk about the campaign tonight for sure. Anthony Joseph says, hi, Jay. Sure miss your show on KSL. Glad to hear you here, though. Thank you both for joining us tonight. It seems like the last few times that I've done podcasts, it's been after a shooting. And I don't want this to be a show that only talks about those things. But at the same time, I feel like we're one of the only shows where we can have discussions about these things without people freaking out and, you know, without everybody running to their corner and the name calling and the hyperbole and all of those things. So in many ways, I feel like, you know what, after this type of event, I have to come on, I have to talk, maybe just for my own sanity to try and figure out what in the world is going on and provide you the same opportunity. Because a lot of us are wondering what is going on for sure. Anthony says he's joining us from Ogden. Let me know where you are listening in from. Say hello. Take a minute and go to the campaign website. If you don't know, if you haven't seen the show for a while or haven't been in touch, I am running for Congress again in the state of Utah, this time in Congressional District 2. And I am looking for your vote, and I am looking for your dollars, and I am looking for you to volunteer, and I am looking for your support. And I will share with you some reasons tonight why I think it's high time for change. Jake and Beth in Tooele. Jake, thanks for joining us. It's good to hear from you. He's joining us from YouTube. Back when I was on the radio, I had to have like a monologue, and I had to have something that I needed to get to. And I feel like my face is really bright here. Sorry to those of you on the To those of you on the podcast, you don't care what I look like, but when I was on the radio, it's like you have to have a subject and a take, you know, a hot take, and you'd come on the air and monologue and then take phone calls or on KSL, we didn't take phone calls, but take text messages and engage in debate, and then you would move on to the next topic. And I feel, at least on tonight's show, I'm doing just the opposite, and that is I'm just opening it up for your thoughts. Kathy joining us in West Jordan, your thoughts starting with what happened in Illinois and talking about another shooting. And I guarantee you, and you know that this is true, it's only going to be a matter of days before we're talking about the next one. This one standing out, perhaps because of the location and the day, but can I just ask, was anyone surprised when it was a 22-year-old kid who fit the same profile again? Was anybody surprised by that? I mean, there's got to be something there. Something that we're missing. again, I'm not driving to any point tonight, just speaking out loud and giving you a forum where you can share your thoughts. Is anybody surprised? Janelle joining us on Facebook from Roy. Hey, Janelle. Thank you for joining us. David says something very sad on YouTube. He says, none of these shootings surprise me much anymore. Sadly. Anthony says, I was very surprised that the profile was so similar. I mean, it... Something is here. You know, I hear this described as a problem. I heard this on CNN many times today from pundits saying a problem that is uniquely American. And I think it is almost uniquely people in their early 20s, male. So don't stop with uniquely American. And then those describing it as a uniquely gun problem. Well, don't stop. There's some other similarities here. There's some other commonalities here that can lead us to something that can lead us to answers and solutions here. If this was a uniquely gun problem, then you would have people of all age groups, all races, all genders. It's not. There's a profile here that is so specific that, I mean, it's like when you're profiling a serial killer and you say, well, it's, you know, they have these tendencies and this kind of background and this kind of, this profile is so specific. There are some exceptions to the rule, but in general, it's like it's the same person over and over again. And that's why, to me, it's not a gun problem. I believe that guns are part of the problem, but it's only one small group of people who all fit the same profile that are deciding to kill and be killed. There is something here that it's one of those situations, and I talk about this a lot in politics, and it's one of the reasons why I'm running, that politicians love to divide us. They love to manipulate us. They love to point out why the other side is evil, and they like to label. And oftentimes, because of that, we end up missing what's right in front of our face because of the label. We never get to the real heart of an issue because of a label, or a divisive tactic. The label here, or the divisive tactic, is that this is about guns. When the truth is, this is about a very specific small group of Americans who are coming to a similar conclusion and carrying out a similar act. And I can promise you that if guns were not involved, that there would be much more discussion about the similarities between the individuals. But because this is a gun issue, it is used to polarize and to divide. And to fundraise. And to separate us. But if you had, for example, the same group of, let's just change a couple of things and see if we would be in the same circumstance. And if you think my logic is off here, please let me know. I'm really just stream of consciousness tonight. If this was a group of 17 to 25-year-old young white males who were running their cars into crowds of people, would it be a car issue? Think about it. Would we be getting into long debates and questions about cars and the types of cars, and we shouldn't have cars that can go over 60 miles per hour, because when they go over 60 miles per hour and a young killer is driving them, then they can kill more people. And so we need to get rid of fast cars because they can kill more people. Would that be the discussion? Or do you think we would break through that and actually get to the discussion of why this is such a unique, identifiable group of profilable people? I'm just thinking out loud. Now, I'm not saying guns and cars are the same. There are people who would make the argument right now, and maybe some of you have texted and I haven't seen it yet, but you know, we need cars, we don't need guns. That's not the point that I'm trying to make. The point that I'm trying to make is, where is the discussion about how similar these individuals are? And where is the desire to get to the heart of that? Because these are people that at some point in their life, Unless there's something genetic in their brains, and this is by birth, at some point in their life, they didn't want to be killed and be killed. And could they have been saved? Could they have been rescued? Could this 21-year-old kid who decided to do this, was there a point in his life when something could have happened? Now, you know, I'm very careful when people talk about mental illness, and people want to chalk this up to mental illness. I'm cautioning you on that. First of all, because of the stigma that mental illness creates. Mental illness is such a broad spectrum of everything. And there's such a range, right? And we don't want the stigma that somebody who has mental illness is a threat or can't have a firearm or something like this. But again, if it's mental illness, why is it just impacting a small group of highly similar people? Think about that. What is going on in America where a mental illness is affecting such a profilable group of people? And is there anything else like that that we can look at that is similar to that? This is where we're going to solve this problem. Now, there are things that can be done, and I've published them, and we've talked about them, and we will continue to talk about them to make it so the problem is not as bad, so that it's harder to get a weapon, so that perhaps the warning signs, that there are things you can do with the warning signs, where you can limit the damage that they can do. But ultimately, you're still left. We do the finger snap test. We snap our fingers, and suddenly there are no guns. Does the problem of this specific group of people wanting to kill and be killed go away? No. No, you can't believe that. Do you believe that? That it just goes away? I don't believe that for a single second. So what is it? I think that, you know, I've shared with you some of my guesses here, that it has to do with a state of mind that is possible based upon certain life choices and behaviors, and that this particular group may be more susceptible. I don't know. Again, I'm just talking out loud here. But I believe that human interaction is critical to good mental health. More than that, I believe that human interaction is critical in order to maintain a level of empathy for our fellow human beings. And that anytime you remove human interaction, empathy goes away and people start appearing to you as objects. And you start forming opinions about other people that are harsh. Incredibly harsh when you don't have human interaction, and especially when you don't have human interaction with those people. This is the danger of the political situation that we're in. When you have people marching on the Capitol and they're looking to hang Mike Pence, this is somebody they've never met. This is somebody that they have no interaction with. All of their beliefs come from the words and labels and actions of somebody else. Mike Pence is not a human being to them. And this is one of the dangers of where we're going in our politics, that the labels are so aggressive that we no longer see somebody who just disagrees with us politically. We no longer see them as a human being. We no longer have any care or empathy for them. It's now hatred to the point of wishing violence. And this occurs anywhere that you take direct human interaction out of the equation. The thing that I always bring up is road rage. That when you're driving in your car and somebody cuts you off, and it was probably just a mistake, they didn't check their blind spot. The rage that suddenly we're filled with, and it's like they made fun of your mother and the cutting off and whatever. It's because the people behind the glass of the other vehicles, they're not real to you. They're not human to you. But if you knew that person, let's say that you were, you're both friends and you're driving somewhere and one of you is following the other and the one who is in front accidentally cuts you off. Do you have road rage? No, you don't. You have understanding and you're like, you'll probably get on that person later on and rib them a little bit and go, hey, nice driving, dude. You almost put me in the ditch. One of the most common things about all of these shooters is extreme solitude. So extreme that I think they lose empathy for people and they stop looking at people as humans. And they start looking at them as objects. And then you add social media and how social media has these algorithms that feed you what you want to hear. And then we help the algorithms because we block out anything that would cause us to have any sympathy or understanding or challenge our belief system. And suddenly that loneliness and the labels and it turns into something. This is what I think is happening. It doesn't explain why it's happening to this particular group of people, but my bet is if you did some research, and I would love the government to spend some money on this, and you know I'm not a big fan of spending government money, but I wouldn't be surprised if this particular group is more likely to be on the computer, more likely to, I don't know. I think that you would find some tendencies that are very similar. But I think that, you know, we live in a country where we are already separated. We live in homes that are, you know, divided. We, you know, our communities compared to those of other countries are very different. And you can live next to somebody for, you know, 10, 20 years and never know their name and never show any interest in them or their lives. This country allows that a lot easier. And I think that's part of it. I just, excuse me, I had a tickle in my throat all day that has me a little bit concerned. see? I apologize for that. Let's go to your comments. There have been so many coming through here. Let me back up and see if I can get to your questions. Janelle says, my friends in Denmark just had a mass shooter. Yeah, we read about that. The whole country is upset. It's so rare there. So rare. I realize we in the USA just expect it now. That's really sad. Jake says, moral and societal decay, isolation and despair, and the pervasiveness of social media. I agree with you on, let's see if I can move you over so people can see your comment since it's already passed on the screen. I agree with you on the isolation, the despair, the pervasiveness of social media. I don't see, and I've looked at a lot of these profiles. I don't know about morals and how those play into this particular group of people. I know people have tried to blame video games, and there has been research on that. And you'd actually be surprised to find that most of them, that I think the last time I looked, it was like 23% play video games at all. So I don't know. Janelle says almost all hot button issues are like that. They are used to divide. If you watch old TV shows from the 70s and 80s, you'll see the same exact arguments we are still having. No real solutions to those issues have happened. Patrick says, but cars come with safety features, brakes, seatbelts, airbags, tail lights. They do, absolutely. But you know how many more lives we could save if we put limiters on cars. If we said a car can't go over 40 miles per hour, there's much more that can be done. When it comes to the gun argument, I am in favor of certain regulations and have made those clear. I think that the key is to find a way to keep the minority who want to abuse their rights to try and somehow make it harder for them. But there's a line where you then say, there is an acceptable level of risk to keep our freedoms. And we're always balancing that. And guns are an exact place for that. But the problem is that if you just focus on the weapon, and this is the point that I was trying to make with cars, that if you just focus on the weapon, then you're not solving the core problem of what it is that is going on with these kids. That's why I made the car analogy. If you suddenly, if this was a case of kids using cars to run into people, we wouldn't be discussing cars. We would be discussing what it is that is making kids want to do this. Would we be discussing ways to make it harder for them to do this in those cars? Certainly that would be part of the discussion and an appropriate part of the discussion. And that's why on this show and in my life, it is highly appropriate to talk about regulations around gun ownership. But to me, we need to make sure that we protect rights and that we also solve problems. And so, for example, when you talk about background checks, how many of the mass shooters have we seen that have passed background checks? So it's important that we have a realistic discussion. But the whole point about cars was not to compare cars to guns. It was to point out that if this was, if the method of killing people were different, I don't think we'd be talking about the method as much as we'd be talking about how remarkable it is and strange that this group of people, this very small, very similar group of people, are all coming to this conclusion. Stephanie says, I'm so glad that you are talking about this, Stephanie, on Facebook. Thank you. David says, see if I can get this on the screen. Context, I'm a gun owner, but even so, it's becoming harder to go down the what if it were cars road, because it just isn't happening with cars nearly as often. We're talking what is happening versus a hypothetical. Once again, I'm a gun owner. I appreciate the right to bear arms. And this is a quick response to your question. I don't know. Again, the point was not that we should treat cars the way that we treat guns. I think a lot of you have missed the point that I was trying to make. The point is that because it's a gun issue, we tend to focus mostly on the gun it because we can take away a gun than to focus on why it is this unique profile of people is doing this. And I believe that if they were using a different method, pick any method, don't pick cars, choose bats, choose clubs, choose knives, choose anything else, I don't think we would be having this massive discussion about the weapon that they're choosing. I think we might be talking more about why it is that this particular group of people is coming to this conclusion. And I don't think we're discussing that nearly at all. I'm not hearing it. So don't get caught up in, is a gun like a car? That's not the point that I'm trying to make. They are not the same. What I'm trying to say is that because the weapon of choice is a gun, I think it makes it very hard to get past that and actually have a discussion about what is causing this? What is driving this group of people to this? That's my point. I hope that makes sense. Stephanie saying video game violence is a huge issue. Again, they have done a lot of studies. Actually, in the studies that I've seen, Stephanie, actually show that video games, that in young kids, they violent video games will cause short-term aggression. But in adults and people of this age group, it actually reduces aggression. It actually gives people a release that they actually use this certain type of aggression therapies. That violent video games have not been shown to be a contributing factor. Now, I'm way open to more studies. I know logically we'd be like, well, people are playing violent video games. No, kids know the difference between this and reality. They know the difference. And again, go and look at the research. Violent video games has not been shown to be a contributing factor. David says, how is this group acting out in countries where that finger snap has happened? Is that the right question to be asking? I think it's part of the question to be asking. If this is uniquely American, or do you have, can we look at other countries and say, let's look at this age group. Let's look at people of this profile and say, are they more prone to violence? Are they more prone to acting out? We have seen in other countries stabbings, people turning to knives and things like that. I think that that's a fair question, David. And I think that it needs to be part of what needs to be asked. I think we should be spending money on this to find out. Let's see here. Sorry if I'm just trying to get to a lot of your comments here. Janelle says, David said something to consider, but I would also argue that the cultures are different enough. It's hard to totally compare. I totally agree with this. You do have to be careful when you make country to country comparisons. For example, you compare our culture to the Hispanic culture. I was having this discussion with somebody the other day. It wasn't related to guns, but it has to do with how so much in the Hispanic culture, there isn't the idea that your goal is to, somebody had kicked their kid out of their house. That's what got us on the story. Their child was 19, and you, at that age, you're an adult, it's time to move out, go get a job and live on your own. And how in many of the Hispanic cultures, that's not, the expectation is almost you're going to live with the family, and then you're going to have your family, and they're going to live with the family, and then, and there's none of this push them out thing that we have here. And so that's a, I think it's a beautiful point, Janelle, that, that culturally, it's different. And to think about that a lot of these, most of these shooters are incredible loners. Would they, in these other cultures, would there even be the opportunity for that level of loneliness? Because you're going to end up, you're living with your family. And you're with your family all the time. So I think that that's a fair question to ask. Let's see. Patrick says, but if you're not competent, they won't let you drive. Again, people are getting caught up in the comparison between the car as a weapon and the gun as a weapon. That was not my intent to start that discussion or that argument. I believe that in any case where there are people who are abusing their rights or freedoms, then as a society, we need to try and find a way to minimize that through regulation and through other things. It's not my point was never about a car versus a gun as far as being used as a weapon. It is about how the fact that it's a gun that becomes a distraction because a gun is such a political hot button and a car is not. So because it's a gun, we never get to the heart of the discussion. I've explained this a couple times now, and I realize I'm way behind on the text messages, so some of you are still responding to that. So forgive me, that's just the nature of how it works when it's text messages. Kathy says, I don't think that is a fair question. So the other way this works is, because I'm getting to your comments later, when you, if you are responding to something that I've specifically said or somebody else has specifically said, please repeat what they said, because I don't know if you're responding to me or to somebody else. Let's see here. Michael Warner joining us on Facebook. He says, Jay, it seems the new trend is for 20-year-old is to buy long guns to maximize their damage, as in, say, 5 to 1 week before they act. We have had people buy the weapons within days of shooting. I absolutely agree that they prefer these AR-style weapons. But if we finger-snap test and suddenly those AR-style weapons were gone, the same group of people would be turning to semi-automatic handguns. And those who have been able to get their hands on long guns have turned to semi-automatic handguns. And some of the worst mass shootings we've had have been semi-automatic handguns. I'm not saying we shouldn't look at ARs. They do more damage. There's no question that a round from an AR does more damage. There's no question. But anybody who thinks or acts like the fact that mass shootings go away if we get rid of ARs, I don't believe that for a single second. And that's why I struggle with weapons-based solutions, because there's still something going on in America that is creating this unique group of people. So whatever our solutions are, whatever we go after, if we do pass some regulations that make it harder to get guns or certain type of guns, if we do go down that path, but we still don't try and figure out why this group of people is being created, I just think the choice of weapon changes. And it may be fewer lives each time that are lost. And that's a viable part of the argument and discussion and should not be discounted. But does this group of people suddenly go away? Or do you still have this group of people and they turn to, whatever the next weapon of choice is? And that's my concern, is that we're in this debate about the weapon of choice, and we're not in this debate about what is creating this group. And how do we stop that? So yeah, if there's things we can do to minimize the damage, to save lives along the process, and still protect the rights of the majority, because I'm a firm believer that if you live in a society where you take away the rights of the law-abiding majority because of the abuse of rights by a very small minority, that eventually you lose your rights. And so we have to be very careful when we go down that path. But that doesn't mean we avoid that path. That just means we have an awareness of what's going on, and we try and find solutions that, for example, we have talked about driving. For example, we say, hey, cars can be dangerous, so we're going to make it so you can't drive until you're 16, and you got to get a license and some training. Now, one of the immediate responses that very strong proponents of gun ownership will tell you is that you don't have a constitutional right to drive. You do have a constitutional right at this point to bear arms. So I'll just throw that in for whoever was typing that right now. Let's see. David says, do you have any links to you can share supporting this? Again, be specific about what it is, because we've talked about studies to video games. So be a little bit more specific. Brad joining us on YouTube, as you have pointed out, social media tends to abstract the humanity out of everything. People don't see avatars as another human being. Yeah, I totally agree with this. It is important to remember that mass shootings have been going on for quite some time. And the similarities between the shooters has been consistent for a lot of that time. So while I think social media does play a role here, it has to be other things going on in our society as well. Stephanie says, mental illness is the issue. We all know this, but when you combine it with violent video games, it will fuel the problems. From the last two teen shooters, I learned they were gamers. Again, I think you may be right. So maybe if this is what you're saying, Stephanie, if there's already some issues and then you add some key factors like violent video games, then does that contribute more, more potential that they go down this path. I don't know. I can just tell you that the last research that I looked at found that violent video games were not something you could look at and say is consistently part of this group. Is it the last two? Possibly. You remember the kid who went in and shot up the movie theater at the Batman premiere. He liked video games, but it wasn't violent video games. It was Dance Dance Revolution. He used to go to that same movie theater and challenge people to Dance Dance Revolution. So I just think you have to be careful when you talk about, I think more research needs to be done. I'd love to see more research. But the last time I went through and looked, I was not finding a lot of studies that have linked violent video games to actual physical violence. But you know, again, maybe you're right if you combine that with a certain type of mental illness, but does that mental illness only happen in this very specific, unique group of people? I mean, that's what's so strange, right? There's a lot of girl gamers out there who play violent video games. A lot of them. You go on Twitch, you'd be amazed at how many 20-something women play violent video games. How common it is. And you just don't see this with that group of people. And so it's like, you know, I feel like sometimes we try and take either what seems obvious, but when you kind of pick it apart a little bit, it doesn't hold up. Now there are things, you know, we're genetically different, so maybe it could be that genetically, young males are more impacted by violent video games than young females. I don't know, but I can tell you, gaming among 20-something women is very popular. Very popular. And you just don't, it just doesn't happen. So, just a thought there. Stephanie says lack of God in the home. That's one of the things that I looked into a while ago. I couldn't find a consistency of that. People talk about parenting in the home. I couldn't find a specific, like, no dad, no. Jake says, I researched this in college. As Jay said, several studies have shown video games making adults violent is just not the case. Stephanie's saying, I don't believe that. Again, I'm not sure what you're saying that to. David says, well, I believe in God and how that belief can positively affect behavior. The countries with the highest levels of atheism are not having problems with mass shootings. Interesting. Stephanie's saying parents need to not give their children violent video games, period. It will affect their brain. I don't care what experts say. You can't always believe what so-called experts say. Stephanie, I'm just telling you that violent video games are being used right now to treat aggression because they give people a way to get aggression out without acting on it. So I can just, all I can do is share with you what I've seen and like what Jake said. I certainly agree. And as a parent, I did not let my children engage in violent video games. Because I didn't think that that was right for children to experience. I also, as a parent, limited their exposure to violent movies and violent music. The funny thing that happened is that two of my children became fixated on those things. And so I have a daughter, and you've met her on this show. She has a TikTok following, and she became fixated on vampires and the macabre, and ended up being a body collector, going to pick up bodies for the morgue, and actually at one point wanting to be a mortician. And it's like, so all these things as a parent that I said, you know, we're not going to allow as a child, it had exactly the opposite effect. Like everything that we said, we don't want you to do. She was your typical child, and she was drawn to those things. So if as a parent, you do not want to allow your children to participate in those things, I completely understand. But when you look at the actual research and how video games are being used to treat people now with violent tendencies, I'm just telling you that that's what they're finding. And it's interesting because it is counterintuitive. But that doesn't mean it's wrong. It just means that sometimes we make some assumptions, and those don't always turn out to be right. Stephanie brings up bullying. The bullying was not a consistent thing that I could find among all of the mass shooters. So many of these shooters are not around other kids at all. They are the loner in the corner and not wanting to participate with other people. And so that was one of the things. I did this a few years ago. Just before the pandemic, I'm like, I'm going to go and I'm going to look. I'm going to see if I can find commonalities with all of these mass shooters. And so many of the things that I expected were not there. One of them was video games, violent video games and violent movies. Another one was bullying. Another one was a certain type of parenting or a lack of parents in the home. I looked for these commonalities and I didn't find them. I did find extreme, extreme isolation. And I did find a lot of time online, but not playing video games. A lot of time online being fed a certain line of thinking. And how do I put it? Certain violent viewpoints. And just getting consumed by that like crazy. Let's go here. Let's get some more. David says, sorry, Jay, that was a response to somebody else. I know it's tough. You know, I may be an hour behind your text messages right now. So I apologize. Orion says mandatory military service for 18 to 22 year olds. I shared this story on the last podcast I did. If you want to go back and check, it was, I just, because we talk about comparing to other countries, I talked about how there's a country that has way more guns than we do, and they actually give guns to their citizens. And gun ownership is a major part of life, and they do not have the mass shooting problem. And it's the Swiss. And one of the parts of that is mandatory military service. They give you a gun when you get to a certain age. Guns are an absolute cherished part of the culture. And they don't have the mass shootings. That's not to say that guns aren't part of the issue. But this is why I think that it's so important that we should, while we're having this discussion about should you be able to own an automatic, not automatic, these are not automatic weapons. AR, they're not automatic. Please know that. But should you be able to own a long gun or an AR? That yes, we should have that discussion. That's an important discussion to have. But if we're having that discussion, but we're not asking the question, what is it culturally in our society that is creating this group of people, then we're missing, then we're not doing our job. We're not doing our job. Stephanie is really driving home the violent video. Stephanie, go do this for me. Go and find research. Send me links. Send me information. The people on this show, you know, I am more than willing to reconsider and change my mind. And love new information. But if you're just stuck on that idea because it makes sense to you, I'm telling you, there are places they're treating PTSD right now with this type of video game. It's just, you know, send me those links. Brad says, I think Stephanie has a good point about combinations being toxic. My point would be that the combination of video games, movies, music, normalizing violence against others as acceptable. Well, again, then we ought to be able to find those combinations in this group of people, right? And we're not finding those combinations. So that's what I'm saying, is that if it is the combinations, then we should be able to say, yeah, 80% of them played violent video games. And that's a combination with something else. It's just not one of the things that we're seeing. The combinations we're seeing are extreme isolation from an early age for many of them, and extreme ideology. Those are the two main things that we're seeing. So we're just not seeing a lot of these other things that we're saying, well, maybe if you add this in. So I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm just saying that I haven't seen those combinations that you're talking about. And I'm saying, as a society, let's talk about it and let's spend some tax dollars and let's find out what it is. I would love to. Brad says, so if I'm mad at the world because of whatever perceived injustices, I may feel like violence against others is acceptable because it is normalized in all forms of media. I think that I would suggest media is involved, but let me suggest, Brad, that it's probably not the media that is being produced by movie studios and video games. I think that it is, and now this, other things that I've shared with you about it not being video games, that's based upon my research that I've done in the past. What I'm about to tell you is speculation. And I don't have anything to back it up, but I think most of you will agree with me that it's not, I don't believe it's the media of the, you know, the violent movie they just watched. And so, oh, it's because you just look at it. I mean, I'll give you an example. If you take a look up until the last few years ago, in fact, maybe I can find it. Maybe I can just find an example here. Maybe this would give, let's see here. Forgive me if you're on the podcast and you can't see what we're talking about. I'll give you an example here of, well, is that a good, maybe I could find a longer period of time. Hang on. Sorry, everybody. But we're doing this in real time. So wait, you guys had nowhere to be, right? I mean, it's 10:30 in Utah. No. Well, maybe we can just use this first one that I pulled up. Here we go. Let's see if I can show this to you. What is that line? That blue line that you see there. That blue line is the murder rate in the United States from 1990 to 2020. Now, if I showed you a graph of the amount of violence that people are subject to in the media from 1990 to 2020, do you think it would look like this? Or do you think it would be just the opposite? When you look at all of the major defining, I'll find you another one. Let's see. How can I phrase this? Let's see here. I hate to go to the wiki. Let's try and find a better source than the wiki. Okay, here we go again. Let me show you this. Very similar blue line, right? What is the blue line? This is assaults in the United States. Okay. And again, I'm sure that if we looked at the number of occurrences of violent acts that are portrayed via video games and via television and movies since 1990, I'm sure that it would look like a rocket. But when we look at the numbers of our society for the last how many decades, crime, murder, assault, they've all been going down. Consistently going down. Now, we've had a spike over the last few years. But generally, they've all been going down. So again, I know we like to think that, you know, it just makes common sense. Well, they're seeing these things, so they're running out and doing it. No, we kind of know the difference. We know the difference between pretend and reality. Looking here again. It's just an interesting exercise. Maybe take a minute and spend some time and look at that. Now, that doesn't rule out what Brad talked about, like combinations, okay? Maybe there's a certain type of people who already has something else genetic or something else going on in their mind, and then you combine it with something else, and that's the unique formula that turns them into a mass shooter. All I'm telling you is I haven't found the combination that includes violent video games, violent movies. I haven't found that combination in there. And it would seem to me, and again, this is just speculation on my part, that if violence on TV and violence in the media and those types of things make people more violent, then you ought to be able to look at the statistics for the last 30, 40 years, and you ought to see violence climbing with what you're seeing on television, with what you're seeing in video games. Don't you think that the violence rate among certain groups should be going through the roof with all of this violence that is being portrayed? The numbers just don't match that. hang on, my throat. Stephanie says some of them were bullied. Yeah, some of them played violent video games. Some of them, and you're not going to find it, you know, something that is for everybody. But, you know, if somebody's going to make the statement that it's violent video games, you would think that's through 80% or whatever, you know, of this whole group. And it's just not. Let's see. Scott says, maybe we could use the info that is gathered by search engines and social media to push therapy programs. This is a different part of the discussion, but it's a very important part of the discussion. Privacy and freedoms. These go hand in hand, because we have an issue here where we probably could use some algorithms on social media to identify ahead of time people who are going down this path. In fact, I can probably almost guarantee it that there is enough knowledge about their online habits, what they're attracted to, those types of things, that pretty soon or even now we could put together. It would be like the Tom Cruise movie. Why can't I think of it? Oh my gosh. You guys know what I'm talking about. You'll tell me. Minority Report, where you could actually use social media to pre-identify people who are predisposed to this. I think we're probably there now. The question is, what do you do with that? In a free society, what do you do with that? This guy who committed this unbelievable act of terror on the parade, posted videos online, songs that had animations of him carrying out mass attacks. There was enough there where you could have said, you know, there's a hello flag, social media flag. But in a world where we also value our privacy, what do you do in that case? This young man also he was suicidal at one point. He tried to take his own life. He also threatened to kill his entire family at one point. And I believe the term was to kill everybody. At what point in a free society do you take away people's rights to own guns, to drive cars, to be among us, when there are warning signs there? As technology grows, this is going to be a harder and harder question to answer. What do you value more? Privacy or safety? And this is going to be a growing question. I believe that there was let me give you a hypothetical situation here. Okay. So, this guy is planning to carry out this mass shooting. And he knows he's going to do it on the 4th of July and he needs a weapon. And so he goes down to the gun store. He passes a background check, but the gun store also does a social media search. And they see that this young man has posted these videos that have animations of him shooting a bunch of people. We could live in a society where this happens right now today, and the gun owner, the gun shop says, nope, not selling to you. What do you think about that? At what point, because we're going to get to a point, if we're not there already, where all of our search habits and all of our, you know, everything we do online will be able to put us in a category of more likely than not to commit an act. And, you know, right now we live in a place where you can go out and talk about committing acts of violence and you're protected, as long as they're not specifically towards other people. If they're not considered direct threats, that's protected. So think about that. Janelle, let's see here. Sorry, guys. Janelle says, I think Stephanie keeps bringing up all the things we have all felt are part of the issue. I think it just points to the fact that we need more research on this. Yes, and that we need to be very careful when we look for the easiest or the most obvious, because it's not always that way. And there are those, I mean, you can see this happening. There are those who will use this for political reasons. And instead of finding out the real truth of what is generating this group of people, they will use legislation to go after the video game industry. And they don't have anything to back up their points, but a lot of people, you know, they get up there on the stump and And they rail against the video game industry, and a lot of people get, And next thing you know, you shut down an industry. And you haven't solved the problem. That's an example of what we need to try and avoid here. Yeah, let's put it out there what we think it might be. But let's be very careful in how we respond and not knee-jerk. Stephanie says, so what is the issue then? If it's not what I'm saying, I absolutely disagree with whatever your research is. Well, Stephanie, with all due respect, you haven't seen my research. And I don't think you've spent the time while we're talking to go and do the research. So do that first and send me what you find. Let's continue the discussion after you've done that. Because you can't disagree with my research that you haven't seen. And I fully admit I haven't presented the research here, but it's really easy to find. It's really easy to Google, do video games cause violence, and to find peer-reviewed studies. It's not, it's really a simple thing. So do that. And then send me what you find. And if they have new research and I have missed something, I will come on the air and I will say, you know what? Stephanie was so right. Look at this. Or whoever sends it to me. Like I said, anyone who's listened to me for years, you know that I am much more interested in getting to the truth than I am than being right. Especially when it comes to something like mass shooters. So take some time and take a look at that. You did hear Jake talking about his research that he did in college, who found the same thing. In fact, here's a message from Jake. Regarding rifles in the home, one need only to look at the situation in Ukraine to see an example of why it would be incredibly useful to have a well-armed populace. Again, this is one of the reasons why the Swiss want their people to have guns, because they want, in case there is some type of invasion, they want their population to be armed. And so they are armed, and they don't have this problem. So it'd be interesting to look at cultures and see what's going on. Stephanie says, I'm just saying it's one of the factors. Let's see here. David, this is really long, so maybe I'll just read it. Please do not take my response as making fun of anybody in particular, but I think it's important to understand that characteristics found in some mass shooters doesn't necessarily mean that it is a cause. Example, more than 98% of convicted felons are bread users. And then he goes through a list of things like that. Stephanie says, so isolated in what? Is that all that there is? Again, talking about commonalities, extreme isolation is one thing, and then extreme indoctrination is another thing. Typically, that extreme indoctrination is done via social media. Those are two of the most common denominators that I've seen. Let's see. Stephanie says, J-Mac, you're driving me nuts. You're rebutting everything we say. LOL. Seriously. Stephanie, I've just asked you to send it to me. Send me the research. You have a strong belief. Send it to me. And I'll be glad to, I'll be glad to look at it. Michael says, you picked one heck of a topic to come back on. But also, Stephanie, I'll tell you, I didn't come on the air tonight not having looked at this. I told you, I spent a huge amount of time looking at mass shootings. I put together spreadsheets. I don't have them anymore. I did them for my show when I was in when I was on the radio. I put together spreadsheets. I put together common issues, common causes. I looked at studies. So I'm not coming at this just saying, oh, you're, you know, I know better than you because I'm smarter than you. I'm just telling you the result of everything that I've looked at and challenging you to do the same. And Orion says, look at me. I played violent video games since Doom for ID Software in 1994. I never once had an itch to mass kill. Well, we call that anecdotal, but Orion knows that. Brad says, if someone is very isolated, what is their only exposure? What is normal? Through media. Oh, you just reminded me. I totally got off topic, Brad. Thank you. I totally did not finish my point because we were talking about what type of media is having an impact. And I apologize. I didn't get back to it. Man, I'm losing it. It's media about mass shootings. Huge impact. Now, remember, I told you this is speculation. So this is not based upon any research I've done or seen, but belief system here that social media's coverage and regular media's coverage of mass shootings, in my opinion, is one of the biggest contributing factors to the frequency and to it happening more. And it was one of the things that I found to be consistent with many, it was a majority of mass shooters, that they wanted some level of fame. And it's interesting, I think that fame is something that you think about youth today. And the desire to be social media famous, the desire to get, everything's about views. Everything is about getting your name out there. Everything is about social media acceptance, not acceptance from friends in real life. In fact, Stephanie brought up, you know, kids just playing with kids instead of being online. A relationship, I believe it's totally different to have two kids playing online and they're talking to each other and two kids playing a board game and they're face to face. And so, because again, remember I talked about human interaction, but again, kids of today, they are looking for likes, for shares. And this started, I remember it was was it Texas A&M? Texas Tech, the Texas Tech mass shooting. The guy made videotapes talking about how he knew he was going to be on the news and how he knew he was going to be famous. And this is a commonality for many of them. You think about this shooter at the 4th of July parade. He was making videos ahead of time. He was rapping about it ahead of time and putting it on social media. So you could have this kind of self-fulfilling machine that is feeding itself because the videos get shown by everybody. I've seen, I have just, I always have the news in the corner of the room on. It's probably because for the last 20 years I've worked in a studio and we've always got the news on in the corner. So I always have a news channel on in the corner. And I can tell you that on the news channel that I've had on all day today, they have re-shown the video of people running down the street and the pop, 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 pop. They have probably shown it over 100 times today. That is part of the problem, I believe. Everybody wants to be an influencer. Everybody wants to be social media famous. Everybody wants to be a YouTube star. And there's a way to guarantee it. You can guarantee it. That is one of the commonalities. And so, yes, media has a play. And I will tell you that when I was on the air at KSL, we had conversations about this very thing. What do you cover, for example, as a news organization? And there was a time, and maybe I'm wrong about this, but you can help me out. There was a time not too long ago when the media stopped sharing the names, at least the major media. Do you remember this, or am I mistaken? They would give out the name if the police were looking for a suspect, so they're helping the police, but then they wouldn't give the name anymore. And they were shortening the coverage. Am I wrong about this? Did this happen in my imagination? But that time is gone now. That I'm seeing the name over and over again. I made a decision on my show on KSL that I won't share names. I'll try and limit information. I'll try, what can you do, in a society where we have to talk about these things, but when you talk about them, you're actually feeding the beast. That is part of it. Media is part of it. Social media is part of it. And I'm not sure what the answer is there. I'm not sure. I mean, does the news not cover a mass shooting? I will tell you this. I think it is reckless and irresponsible to play the video 100 times over and over and over again. I don't think that there is a reason, and I wouldn't do this legislatively. I just wish people would do this responsibly. I think that an editor of a news organization makes a choice and says, we're not showing that. We are not giving this killer exactly what they wanted. We're not going to show their act to millions of people. We're not going to do that. I think that that's a big part of it. Let's see here. Stephanie's saying he's just going to say there's no proof of that too. Again, Stephanie, I've been asking you to send me the proof. You do it. You can Google right here. You can put a link right here. And I'm pretty good. I tell you when I'm speculating, and I tell you when I've seen evidence. Instead of saying that I'm just shooting everything down, prove me wrong. I'd love it. Just prove me wrong. And let's get out there on this show tonight that violent video games are part of the problem, that they're a commonality, that they're it's simple. And she said, I think we've lost Stephanie. I think she's left already. I hope she does go and take the time. I hope all everybody does. Let's see here. Jake says New York just passed a law requiring 3 years of social media history before issuing a firearms license. So that's interesting, because, you know, we all know what cause and effect will be. I mean, honestly, as I think just out loud, Jake, about that law, I think it's kind of ridiculous. In fact, it's really, really, I mean, I can't believe they think that there's any viability to that. Because I'll just have another account where I put all of my violent stuff. I know people that have 20 TikTok accounts. So you really think in New York that I'm going to go on YouTube and I'm going to make all of these threats, and then knowing that there's this 3 years of social media, I'm going to go down and try and buy a gun and have them search that under my name? I know you're not suggesting it, but to me, under the current construct of social media, that just makes no sense whatsoever. David says, I think one thing Facebook could do is change its algorithm for people who are displaying these symptoms. Janelle, going back to my example of a private gun shop searching YouTube, Janelle says, I mean, in this scenario, a private gun shop deciding to do that or the government mandating it, they are different. Trying to catch up to where you guys are at. Scott says, it's a scary idea that our info could be used to spy on us and it could be used for evil. But are the algorithms not already using that info to push people into smaller, more extreme social bubbles? Yes. By design. Social media, it makes perfect sense to me why they do it. And if I was a business person, I mean, you don't start a social media platform to not have people use it. So if I start a social media platform, I can give people exactly what they want, they're going to use it more. It's like, it goes back to smoking and tobacco, right? Only this time it's information. So if I can make a cigarette more addictive, then they're going to have to come back and I'm going to sell more cigarettes, right? So it's almost the exact same thing, isn't it? If I can make social media more addictive just by giving you more of the information you want, and I don't think you can call it evil. I think it's just a business trying to provide what you want, but the end result of that is some type, you know, you're in this bubble, you're in this echo chamber, and you're never challenged by anything else. You know, it's like, what do you tell social media? Hey, you can't do that. Social media, you need to stop giving people what you know they want. How do you do that? That's crazy. Orion says, so you think the copycat thing, copycat effect is a thing? I do. Very much so. I do. Brad says, let's see. I agree that mainstream news media bears at least part of the responsibility for fomenting division everywhere, claiming the sky is falling and obsessing about the shooting and violence that happened. And I'll give you an interesting perspective on that, Brad, because I just told you about social media is just giving us what we want. And is that a bad thing? The news channels are doing exactly the same thing. Why do you think CNN is playing that video over and over again? They're playing it over and over again because that's what gives the ratings, which means that's what we're asking for. So it's this weird situation. I mean, why do you think, for example, that every major television show, it seems like, on every network is a murder show? We have an NCIS for every city in America, practically. I'm surprised we don't have an NCIS Provo yet. We are, as a people, fixated and fascinated on murder and solving murder. And the result of that is this millions and millions and millions and millions of dollars of programming every single day of murders. And if it's not fictional murder, then it's Dateline or 2020. And that's where the ratings are. I can tell you, hang on, from experience as a member of the media, that many times media organizations will try to put out the heartfelt story. Let's do a series on people that just do good. Stories about the Good Samaritans. Stories about the heroes in society. They flop. They flop. And it's because that's not what we want as a people. So who's to blame for that? Is it the media who is feeding us what we're asking for? Or, and it very rarely can break through. I remember there's been some examples of where you can break through, and I'm not saying you can't, and I'm not saying media shouldn't try. But there was a time, you remember when it started with Donahue. I don't know how many of you remember Donahue, but Donahue was like the first show where you would have on controversial figures, and Donahue would have his microphone, and he would go around and he would let members of the audience ask questions. And it was like one of the first, it's the first show like that I remember. And then all of a sudden there was this craze. It was the Maury Povich, and I don't know, you can name them all. And it's like, Jerry Springer and everybody else. And it was like doing the DNA test and who slept with this person and whatever. And it was just like this feeding frenzy of just bad people doing toxic bad things. And man, I hope I am not getting sick. There was a show that had a similar format. And that show was Oprah. And I've heard Oprah talk about this. She made a choice. She realized one day that she was giving a voice and a microphone to bad people. And she was doing it for ratings. And she made a choice to turn her show into something positive. And she's one of the rare shows that was able to pull it off from that time period. I think nowadays, we have some decent, talk entertainment shows like Kelly Clarkson, or I think you could even throw Ellen in there, even though she's not on anymore. But at the time, Oprah said, no, I'm not going to do that anymore. I'm going to show good, and I'm going to make my show about people doing good, about people changing their lives. And it turned her into a billionaire. But it's something that is rarely accomplished, because in general, as a people, we would rather watch the yuck. And I've seen the ratings to prove it. You've all heard the saying, if it bleeds, it leads. That's not because somebody in a newsroom is saying, yeah, I love to show terrible, evil things, and I'm a terrible, evil person. That's an executive looking at the ratings and trying things out and producing what we want to see. Because these are businesses, and people forget that. Media can't survive without ratings. So you can bet when you have a radio station or a TV station that is producing a certain type of content, and they're doing it on a regular basis, you can bet that is a result of ratings. Because guess what? Media is paid for, at least in the traditional model. It's changing now. But in the traditional model, you didn't pay for the content. The advertiser paid for the content. And I have been in, I don't know, hundreds of meetings where an advertiser is saying, okay, what's your ratings? What are people listening to? Do you have this number? Because we don't buy media that doesn't have at least this number. And so you're in a constant search for ratings. So there are a lot of people out there that think that there is some master plan by the media to become more toxic or more ugly or to do whatever. I'm just telling you, I have a lot of experience in this regard. I have sat through, I don't know how many studies where they will put 10 people in a room and they will play them my show. And those people all have access to a dial. And they turn the dial one way when they like what they're hearing, and they turn the dial another way when they don't like what they're hearing. And I have to sit there. It's excruciating. Oh my goodness. I have to sit there and watch as and it's something, you know, that you're just like so proud of, and you're like, that was so great that we did that. And they turn the needle down, and you're like, oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. It's just important to understand that if we weren't watching it, it wouldn't be on. It's an important part of the equation that we realize our role in all of this. If the people didn't want to see the video of the shooting on the 4th of July, then CNN wouldn't have played it 100 times today. So who's to blame for that? That's my question. A long story. Abby is joining us. She's telling Orion to go to bed. let's see. Oh yeah, Patrick said if it bleeds, it leads. Let's see. Scott says you bring up a very good point and a good analogy, but the cigarette companies did have to eventually change and stop showing ads on TV. Maybe with all the bad social media is doing with putting people into smaller, more extreme groups, maybe that could be used to push help and therapy for more and make profits on top of it. There's a huge difference between making your product more addictive physically and hiding it and lying about it, and giving somebody just more of the same type of information that they want. And I don't know how you regulate that, and honestly, I don't know if I want to regulate it. I think in many ways, the responsibility is on the side of the consumer in that equation. And so what we need is, I don't know if it's education. I don't know. I'll be honest, Scott. I don't know the answer on that, but I can't imagine a situation like ours where, where you literally say you can't give people information. You can't give them what they're asking for when it's information. Man, that's tough. That's really tough. I don't know. Give me your thoughts on that. One of the things about it, about a free society is that we leave people alone even when they put off warning signs, until it's almost more likely than not that they're going to do something. So I don't know. I don't know the answer. I know exactly why social media does it. And to me, it seems like a great business plan. Let's give them more of what they want, so they have to use our product more. But that's making it more addictive, and it's certainly feeding the problem that we're talking about tonight. I don't know the answer in a society of freedom of the press, freedom of information. I just don't know. I don't want government censorship. I'll tell you that right now. I don't want the government telling a company they can't give me information that I want access to because I might get addicted to it. I can't support that. So I just don't know the answer to that one. Brad says, you made the point earlier that it was irresponsible to show the video 100 times. Just because the masses want the opiate, the media doesn't have to give them the drug. Society will want the opiate. You're exactly right, which is why, in that case, who did I blame? I did blame us. If we turned that stuff off, I mean, I give you a perfect, Brad, I would ask you, if the minute they started showing that stuff, if we decided, hey, this is contributing to mass shootings, if you show that stuff, we're going to turn it off, then it would stop. So we have power there. But do we want it? And how do you educate to it? And then there is just something called a moral responsibility. And can we expect CNN to have that moral responsibility? Something, if we do expect them to have that moral responsibility, then we've got to stop watching. if we continue to watch, then we're all to blame. They're to blame. We're to blame. Everybody's to blame. And then we just continue to contribute to it. So I don't know, man. I don't know what you know. Do you? And it's interesting. Brad, how societies are different in this regard. We talk about cultures that are different. We have shows like where Caught on Video, right? We have those in the U.S. Caught on Video, and it shows you a plane crash, or it shows you a car accident, or somebody escapes something, or, you know, and we have those shows, but there's this rule, and it's not a law, but it's this rule that I don't know who puts it in place, but they don't show death. So generally in the United States, I'm not aware of a show caught on video where the video will show, and there was a point where even if the death didn't happen, that, or if the death did happen, they'll stop it and they'll describe what happens afterwards, right? So this is what I'm used to in media, that we don't show that. So one day I'm watching Spanish television, and here comes a caught on video show. And guess what? They were showing everything. And I'm like, oh, I couldn't believe what I was seeing. I just was like, oh my goodness. And you know when else this happened to me is with the tsunami in Japan. I don't know if you listened to me back then, but I don't know if you experienced this, but I watched the tsunami live. I watched all night. I couldn't go to bed. And I watched in horror as people were swept up by these waves. And you'd see this little car driving away as fast as they can. And the car is picked up and rolled around. And you just knew that person didn't survive. And I watched in horror as Japan was just devastated, and I watched people die. And if you watch the tsunami coverage live, you watch them die. But then the next day, on all of the media, they were not showing those same images. Somebody was making a choice. Well, we're not going to show that. But I watched it live. I know what happened. I know there's video of it. But somebody was making a choice. We don't. And in general, in the United States, we still don't show something where somebody actually dies. Like, I'm sure that video that CNN's been showing, there's probably a part in that video where you see something. And they're making a choice not to show it. So there's still somewhere where, you know, these choices are being made. But that's kind of a societal rule, and it doesn't get broken very often. There's no rule on that. David says the news in Costa Rica shows bodies all the time. I didn't realize how much I appreciated that being left out of our news. It's absolutely true. So our standard is different. We need to change our standard on the coverage of mass shootings. And there was a while where we were heading in the right direction. And I feel with the last couple that have happened, I don't know why, but it feels to me like we have reversed course. And I think as a people, maybe we need to somehow express our frustration and dismay that that course is being changed, and it seems like we're heading back in the other direction. Because I do believe that that is part of the problem, for sure. How long have we been going tonight, guys? Oh my gosh, 2 hours? Wow. Any other thoughts on that before we wrap up? Great thoughts tonight. Great thoughts. And again, if you, I just guarantee you, if you have anything that you find that contradicts things that I've said, where I've said there's research, not when I say I'm speculating, actually when I say I'm speculating too, because I want to know the truth, man, I am open. I am open to be proven wrong. And I will come on the air and I will share the new research and information, and I will do my mea culpas or whatever else. I am not here to be the person that is right. I am not here to gin you up to anger. I am not here to manipulate you so that I can get ratings or for views. None of those things interest me. So if there is some place where you're like, hey, Jay got that one wrong, man, send me the links. And the person who was on earlier tonight, who just continued to say that what I was saying was not true, I've asked for them to back it up, and they're not with us anymore. So send it to my email. You see all my social media there at the bottom of the page. Tweet me, whatever we can. Michael says, Jay, on your campaign, I've had trouble donating on my PayPal. Am I the only one? Michael, when we first set things up, we had some issues. So how long ago was this? Because that's a major concern. I would like to know. Brad, who is the person who runs my website, he's saying clear your browser cache and cookies. You can also try donating with Venmo or credit card. So apparently sometimes we do have this issue with PayPal or Apple Pay or Google Pay. Sometimes with PayPal, I have the same issue and I have to clear the browser cache and the issues. But thank you so much for wanting to donate to the campaign. You see right there on the screen, jmacforutah.com. We need your help. I'm just going to tell you straight up. If you want change, you're going to have to buy it. I don't know how else to say it. You're going to have to buy it with your donations. It is not enough to just say, I'm going to vote for somebody. It's not enough. The change you are looking for is not going to happen. You're going to have to sacrifice some dollars. I hate to tell you that. That is the world we live in. If you do not have dollars, of course your vote can help. But you can put out a yard sign. You can become a social media ambassador. You can replace money with effort. So if you go to jmacforutah.com, you can volunteer. You can donate. But if you are looking for different and for change, and somebody who's not afraid to talk about these important issues, go to JMAC for Utah and donate. Janelle says, if you don't have the money, you can donate time to volunteer. Janelle volunteers to our campaign. Thank you, Janelle. And thanks for hanging out with us so late tonight. I think it's been a very good discussion. I don't know that we have solved any of the world's problems tonight, unfortunately. But I think you've probably gained some insight into the media and how it works. Maybe learned something about some of the misconceptions that are out there. And how easy it is to fall prey to those misconceptions, and how quickly people will use those misconceptions to try and manipulate and divide. I'm looking for real solutions. I don't care what side of the aisle they benefit. I don't care whether they make me something I said 3 years ago and now I've had to change my position. I don't care about those things. I want to get to the truth. I want to build on common ground. I believe there is common ground on just about every single issue out there, if we just choose people who are willing to look for it. That doesn't mean we all have to agree on everything. But I believe that there are issues where there is easily common ground, but our representatives today don't want us to find it or see it, because they're using division to separate us into two nice, tidy groups that they can manipulate and control. Meanwhile, those of us in the mainstream middle who would like to find common ground and real solutions, we're left without representation. Well, it's time we demand representation. It's time that we demand change. Patrick says, do you think they should put limits on campaigning like they do in the UK? Patrick, I'm not familiar with the UK's campaigning. I will take a look and find out. Is it a limit on campaign funds? Let me know. I'll take a look at it, and maybe next podcast we'll talk about it. In the meantime, I think my voice is done tonight. Thank you, everybody, for staying up with me. It's 11:38 now, Utah time. If you weren't able to listen to the whole thing, this will stay up on YouTube and up on Facebook, and it will also be available via Apple Podcasts and Spotify and all of those other areas or platforms as well. So with that, I'm going to sign off and say thank you. Be sure and go to the website, and at the very least, go to jmacforutah.com and sign up for our newsletter so that you can keep track of everything we're doing. We're going to be at the Farmington Parade on Saturday. If you're up in that area, we'd love for you to walk with us and join us for that event. Patrick says, I believe you can only campaign 6 weeks before an election. Yeah, I don't know about, I'm not sure what that benefits. I'll have to look at it and see what I think. Other than that, my friends, Michael, give me the thumbs up. I will let you go and get to sleep, so that you can get to work early in the morning. Thank you for your support. Thank you for listening. And again, I'm asking you, send me the evidence if you disagree with me, so that we can both be bettered by it. I would love it. With that, my friends, Patrick, thanks for the like. With your like, we will end the stream. Everybody have a wonderful night.